Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/watsonassistant.
This is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg.
Wednesday, also known as Hump Day, which makes me think of Rick. And it's very, very lovely outside.
Very interesting that you would look at it that way.
Well, I wasn't thinking like that. I was thinking like, you know, hump day in that. Where your mind went is completely up to you.
What are you talking about where my mind went?
Where your mind went.
That's where my mind always is. So.
So you were just there. I just kept you where you typically are.
Well, yeah, but hump day was yesterday. Tuesday for me, luckily for me, was actually, was hump day.
Boy. All right. Well, it's Wednesday, hump day. Good morning, Chris Canty. How are you?
I'm doing good, Dave. Another day, another proposal by the MLB players. Listen, I know we're going to dive into it. I don't want to jump the gun, but this is getting ridiculous now, Dave.
Yeah. The MLS is back. Like, another sport. It's like, how many sports can come back as MLB plays this nonsensical game and continues along? MLS is going to be back. And, I think it's July 8th. They said it's going to be back. So that's pretty soon for soccer. And we sit here, Rick, before we even jump in. I mean, let's give you a hearty good morning. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic, Dave. Like I mentioned, I mean, I know just because it's Wednesday, this should be hump day, but one of the unintended positives to come out of this pandemic was you wouldn't have believed the look on my wife's face when I walked in the door yesterday after obviously, you know, disinfecting that I found Charmin Ultra Soft toilet paper.
It was probably like liquid gold you walked into that
house. This was like, it was like I bought her a new piece of jewelry. I mean, it was unbelievable.
She looked at you like you actually fixed something around the house, huh?
The response was unbelievable. It was like, okay, kids, go downstairs and play. Mom's got some work to do. I was like, this is unbelievable.
So catching the chipmunk or bringing in the appropriate toilet paper?
I know I can catch the chipmunk, but she doesn't want me to kill the chipmunk. So this yesterday, coming home it was a surprise. She didn't even ask me to do it. I was just out. She had mentioned it the last couple of days, like, we need some toilet paper. And I just so happened to walk across some Charmin Ultra Soft. I walked in and it was like, I mean, it's unbelievable.
Manna from heaven. Oh,
I mean, what a treat for me.
Wow. Well, good for you.
Yeah, it was a nice Tuesday. I didn't expect it either. It was nice. You know, those surprise ones that are always nice.
Always nice. It's always nice. So last night, we'll get into it later, 12:30. What time did you go to bed? The weather, which it looks like it's going to be another good forecast at 12:30, but you have
weather
to wait for
that. Weather outside is weather.
Yeah, it is weather. 12 o'clock, Paul Feinbaum will join the show. We always look forward to talking to Paul. Been a long time, right? We haven't spoken in since the end of football, college football season.
Well, he cheated on us. Yeah, I mean, he's been on our radio.
He's been on the station, just not on this show.
Yeah, he's out gallivanting with other shows. I don't like it.
Well, I mean, he's going to have the latest on Heisman 2020, so I look forward to that at 12 o'clock today.
By the way, too, let's just touch on this quickly. The idea that Reggie Bush was disassociated because of what he did with USC for 10 years, is that ridiculous or what?
Well, it's ridiculous and it's strange. Like, why would you disassociate from a university? Why would they not want no part of you? You're one of the great players in the history of the school. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think it's because he received the improper benefits, and that was a mandate by the NCAA. I don't think that's something that SC unilaterally imposed on Reggie Bush. But we'll get Feinbaum to get into it a little bit later.
Oh, we got to ask him about Dabo. We got to ask him about college football. I mean, we're talking about the start of college football right down the road.
Yeah,
as if nothing's happening in the country.
Yeah, Dave, he's going to hear the latest on everything that's going on in the world of college football.
Yes. Yes.
I kind of want to nibble on his earlobes a little bit.
Stop it.
Is that weird?
Yeah.
That's a little weird.
Very.
Now, is that in a Mike Tyson kind of way, or is it like...
Well, Mike was ferocious. Mike was... I'm just trying to figure out. That was not nibbling. There was no nibbling going on there. That was full, like attack.
That was a full chomp?
That was a piece of steak. No, that was... nibble on his
earlobes. A very respectful nibble.
Right. A very respectful
just like,
nibble.
Yeah, just like a little, like when you get a puppy, like they don't want to bite your finger, like they just want to nibble a little bit.
Okay.
That's kind of what we're looking at.
All right, got it.
Are you telling them that?
Thank you for clarifying that, Rico. Appreciate that.
Yeah. That will not be.
Maybe this is exactly why he's avoiding the show.
Maybe it is. I think when he went on with Bart and Hahn, there was no nibbling earlobe conversation. It's can be uncomfortable.
Oh my goodness.
At times. All right, so let's get into it. I can't even believe it's like every day with Major League Baseball, but here we are again. So the players go back with a new offer, right? They go down to what, 89 games now from the 114, and of course, as you figure, that's not going to be accepted. So the players will go 89. The owners will go 76 at prorated salary. I guess the question, Rick, is are we making any headway, or is this just going round and round with nothing being accomplished?
Well, it's not 76 fully prorated. It's 76 games, 75% of your fully prorated salary.
Correct.
And that is, I mean, from everything I've heard from Jeff Passan and everything I've read, that's the sticking point for the players, is they don't look at the March agreement with any ambiguity. They think it was fully prorated salaries on depending on how many games we play, and they're not going to budge. And I think the reason why we're at this point now is because I think the owners are smart enough to realize that that was going to be the sticking point for the players, and they have the number, like we mentioned yesterday, or a number they want to spend on player costs, so they're just going to just keep pushing this thing along until they get to the amount of games that they want to play.
Which is ridiculous, because you know the players are not going to be comfortable with taking anything less than their pro rata salaries. And so it just feels like this is one of those things that the owners started negotiating with, knowing full well that they were never going to come to an agreement. Like Jeff Passan talked about it. He said that these two sides are probably not going to find any middle ground in these negotiations. They're too far apart. Under the current proposal from the players, you're talking about $2.25 billion in player costs. And where the owners were at with it on Monday with the 76 games at 75% of their salaries, you're at $1.432 billion. So, I mean, that's a lot of money. You're talking about a difference of $700 million. I just don't know how they're going to be able to come up with a plan where the two sides can split the baby and move forward. I just don't see it happening.
I feel like it's going to be somewhere around, if this does happen, and let's face it. As much as the owners want to believe that Rob Manfred could just impose this 50-game schedule and the players are going to show up. I mean, if you read some of these articles, it sounds like some of the biggest names won't show up because they don't need the money or the service time, which would be bad for the game. On top of that, because there's no agreement, you're not going to get extended playoffs. So you're not going to get the 16 teams in the playoffs, which I think would be exciting. You're not going to get players mic'd up. You won't have that. And more importantly, you're going to have a contentious situation next year. Who knows what happens with free agency, and then going into the labor negotiations, which could end up in a strike or whatever.
Oh, could you imagine that? If we don't get baseball this year and then we wind up with a strike next season?
Oh, no, you're going to get baseball. See, that's the thing, though. You keep saying we're not going to, but they're going to make it. Rob Manfred can make it that there is baseball, and then you have to decide as a player if you're going to show up or not. That's what it sounds like.
If there's 48 no games, because that's what they want to play. 48
whatever.
Games.
Well, that's the only reason. I'm sitting there listening, and Jeff Passan, I give him credit, man, because he's on every show, he's making phone calls and everything else, and you can just tell, like, he's worn out, like he's had enough of this. But he said, well, these proposals should have been made months ago, like in April. Well, yeah, that would make sense, unless the entire time the owners knew that the players are only going to settle for their fully prorated salaries.
Right.
And they're just going to start ticking away days of the calendar. So you're finally at a point where, hey, we agree, but because we want to end the season on a certain date, we only have this many days.
Right, and they keep saying end of September is when they want to have this thing done by. So if they walk it out that you don't start till, you know, 2 months, right? So what is that? That's July, August. No, so it's August, September, regular season. Well, you know what? August, guys, is not that far off now, amazingly enough. We're almost mid-June, so we got, what, 7 weeks till August, and we have no deal in sight? We're walking down to the point where you're not going to be able to start before August anyhow pretty soon.
Yeah, Dave, the owners are being diabolical with this, though. When they came to that agreement in late March, I mean, they put in that language that said that if there wouldn't be fans in stands, that they would have to revisit negotiations. I think their sole purpose for revisiting the negotiations is to drag this out to the point where we get to a place in the middle of the summer where it's not plausible to play a 76-game or an 82-game season.
So all we can do is 50 games, and here's the best offer we can make for you guys.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And so I think that's what this whole thing has been about, and that's not good faith negotiations. And so ultimately, I think we end up with the two sides in court because the MLBPA would have filed a grievance saying that the owners did not put forth their best effort to play as long of a season as they possibly could. I think that's where we're headed. And that's not the backdrop that you want for the 2021 collective bargaining agreement negotiations.
But if that's the mindset, Chris, and you're the owners and you realize that if you do impose this 50-game season and the union is going to take you to court, the only way to avoid that is to just keep going back and forth with Fugazi proposals, saying that we gave you proposals, and now all of a sudden you drag it on like you just said, and now there's not enough days. So you get to a point where, you know, maybe they do come up with an agreement. It's fully prorated salaries, but because we don't have enough time, it can't be 76 games. Maybe it ends up being, you know, it's not going to be 50, so we'll compromise. We'll make it. I still think it's going to be 65. We'll just say for this, it's 65.
65 at what? You think 65 at full prorated, or you think
65? I think 65 at full prorated, because when you look at the first couple of offers, right, the players wanted 82 games fully prorated, which is, I mean, essentially half of their full salaries, right? 50%.
Mm-hmm.
Then the owners came back, and it was 30%. You'd get 30% of your full salary. So I feel like 65 fully prorated, that's about 40% of what you would have made for the season. It's in the middle.
And it's better than 50 games. Isn't that where we have to go now? We have to find a middle ground to get this thing done?
Yeah, I mean, that would be the hope. But, I mean, as far as Major League Baseball is concerned, they have all the leverage because they have the power to impose a 50-game season and put it on the players to decide whether or not they want to show up. And there'll be some players that definitely show up.
Oh,
I
yeah.
Mean, I heard some sound today from Delino DeShields Jr. saying he's like, both sides are being selfish. And it's like, come on, man. I mean, you're not supposed to say that.
No.
It's the last thing you're supposed to say.
No. But you know what happened? Go ahead.
No, but this is the problem, Chris. You know this. You live this. I mean, I was on the executive committee. We live this. Trying to get everyone on the same page is virtually impossible. No, it is. It's not virtually. It is impossible. Because every guy is at a different stage of their career. Every guy has, you know, a certain amount of money that they're looking out for just them in the moment.
And you know what, Rick? That may all well be good for them. But I guess the whole point of it is you jeopardize the strength of the union when you start making statements publicly about what you want and about what you would like to do. Like Delino DeShields saying, I want to come back and play baseball. That doesn't help the union's position. That only puts more pressure on Tony Clark and on the executive committee. I mean, one of the hardest parts with going through CBA negotiations and going back and forth with pro sports team owners is just being able to have solidarity and getting everybody that's in the union to shut the hell up and let the mouthpiece for the union do all the talking. And right now, that hasn't been the case for the MLBPA. And I don't understand why Tony Clark and all the other guys on the executive committee haven't reached out to all the players around baseball and told them, listen, be quiet. Let us take care of this business, because that's the only way that you're going to be able to have an effective negotiation with the owners. That's the only way you got a shot as a player. If you try to come out individually and say what you want, chances are you're probably not going to end up with what you want, unless it's exactly what the owners want.
Here's the other thing that I don't like, and I wouldn't like if I was Tony Clark in the union. So at a certain point, I mean, let's be honest. Like, if there is a season, I don't care how many games it is, if it's 50, 65, or whatever it is, and you get, you know, a full playoff and then they award a World Series champion, the purest baseball fan will be upset, but they're still going to watch. Right, you're still going to watch.
Of course you will.
Okay, right. So at some point, as we go, you know, this season, next season, the following season, you can own these teams unless you're the Wilpons, because apparently they're going to, you know, start defaulting on payments. So whoever buys the Mets.
It's not that funny. I don't know why.
No, it isn't funny. No, it's not funny. But at some point, because it's an appreciating asset, like you'll be whole. Whatever money you lose this year, yeah, at a certain point, I mean, the way these franchises are going, you'll become whole because your franchise is going to be worth more money, right?
Mm-hmm.
Players, that's not the case. Whatever you lose this year, it's gone. You're not going to get it back. Here's what I don't like, though, is that there are ways, sooner rather than later, that the owners of these teams can make back a lot of the money that they lose this season. The players don't see any money. Like, baseball wants to add teams, correct?
They'd like to.
So that's money in their pockets. That money doesn't go to the players. So if all of a sudden you want to add a team or two, you're talking about, I mean, what's it going to cost? $1 billion?
And that'll get distributed from all these teams, no?
Yeah, that gets distributed to the owners, not to the players.
Right. Of course.
Yeah, so I mean that's another option for owners. They want to make more money. Well, let's add a team. Let's add two teams. There's $2 billion right there. Plus the revenues that they bring. I mean, it's just I can understand why the players are aggravated, but I mean at a certain point you got to take a step back and realize that you can't look at what's going on now as a fight for future generations of players. That's not what this is. This is not a typical CBA negotiation. This is
the country needs baseball, and people need their sport back.
Well, no, your sport needs baseball. Forget the country for a second. Yeah, I mean, we can all agree that the country needs a nice distraction. They need sports. Your sport needs to play. Mm-hmm. Your sport is not in a position or healthy enough where you can afford to lose an entire season. You can't do it.
You're not in a position where you can miss an entire season, but let me be clear. I think any sport, if they missed an entire season because of what Major League Baseball is going through, they're going to take a huge hit. That's any sport. So, I mean, If they don't play.
Correct.
They would take a huge hit. So, I mean, I don't think that baseball is unique in that regard, but what I will say is, I think that baseball is in a better place financially than what the baseball owners are willing to let on. I mean, if you heard the comments from the St. Louis Cardinals owner yesterday talking about how he doesn't believe that the sport is as healthy financially as some of the players might believe, well, I can understand why the players would feel that way. When you look at the Cardinals, they were an organization that was bought in the hundreds of millions back in the 90s, and now the franchise is worth $2.2 billion.
Yeah.
So if you're a player,
Cubs did the same thing the other day, right? How much money we're losing.
Yeah, the Cubs said the same thing. So I mean, I recognize that those are valuations and that's not necessarily money that the team actually has, but these teams aren't being valuated at that level by Forbes unless they're profitable. Like that's the whole point of it. I mean, if you can sell something for billions of dollars, that at some point in those books, in the accounting, you've got to show some level of profitability. So to suggest that baseball as a sport isn't profitable, I just think that's a slap in the face from the owners toward the players. I just think that's absolutely ridiculous. So I get why the players are taking this stance and trying to play hardball, literally and figuratively, because of what the owners are trying to do to them, which is try to paint them out, to try to demonize them in the court of public opinion as these greedy characters, when that's not what's happening. It's actually the owners that are being the opportunists and trying to take advantage of the pandemic and everything that comes along with it in terms of the financial implications. I just think this is a bad look for baseball, but I think that baseball fans are pointing the finger at the wrong guys here.
What's amazing to me too, to even try to wrap your head around some of these numbers, I mean, you're talking about an $11 billion industry. And we're talking about, you know, players' proposal that's going to be $2.2 billion as opposed to the owner's $1.4 billion. I have a hard time believing this. And I could be wrong. You guys can correct me if you think I'm wrong. I'm sitting here reading Bob Nightingale's article. Could this be possible? The owners insist they will lose $640 million per team for each regular season game played.
$640 million per team for each game played?
That's what they're saying. They will lose $640 million per team for each regular season game played. That's why they want a shorter season.
Does he go into detail of how that's possible?
No, it doesn't go into detail. That's what the owners are telling the union.
But
how much money with no fans in seats they'll be losing per
team. So you're telling me that the fans bring you more than $500 million a game?
But again, that's what I have a hard time believing. I don't
believe that.
Am I missing something in the like that doesn't make that's not possible.
I'm sitting there thinking baseball last year was $10.7 billion in revenue generated according to Forbes. I don't know how that's possible where every regular season game represents $500 million.
Every game represents $640 million. So you're telling me one day of baseball is 15 games times $640 million?
I'm reading directly from the article. It says, the owners prefer a shorter season, as few as 48 games, insisting they will lose $640 million per team for each regular season game played.
Yeah, I just, for some reason, I can't believe that. I just can't believe that.
That seems crazy to me.
I wonder if it means over 48 games. Like, there's no way that that can be accurate.
Yeah, the owners must be doing that new math, man. That just doesn't make sense to me.
So you're telling me if they play a 50 game schedule, you're looking at 640 million. I mean, each team's going to be playing 48 games. You're talking about tens of billions of dollars. It doesn't add up. It doesn't make sense.
No, that doesn't make sense. But that kind of stuff being out there, Dave, is why the players are not budging in terms of their stance. Like, unless the owners are willing to be fully transparent and show them exactly where all of the losses are, the players aren't going to make any concessions in terms of demanding their prorated salaries, and nor do I think they should. Like, if you're saying that this is an extenuating circumstance, this is, you know, unprecedented, and that we're going to take huge losses, well, show me where the losses are. Let's open up the books and show me where the losses are. You're asking us to operate in good faith and negotiate in good faith and to take a haircut in a situation where we're incurring more risk just based on what's going on with the pandemic. You're asking us to do this because you're losing so much money. Show us where the losses are. If you show us where the losses are, then maybe we can come to some kind of agreement. Maybe that makes this negotiation a little bit better. The one thing I will say is, I guess it's an encouraging sign that they're trading proposals back and forth this week. We've already had three back and forths, and it's Wednesday, so that's a good thing.
And at least the number's getting closer, right?
And it feels like it's inching. It's inching closer, yeah. Dave. Well, at a snail's pace, but it's inching closer. But I think one of those things that could kind of get this expedited and kind of speed things up is if the owners would be more transparent in terms of the finances of baseball and the current situation that they're in. I think that's the way to go if you're truly interested in getting a deal done. But to Jeff Passan's point and what Rick said earlier, I don't think that's the owner's intent. I don't think they care if they get a deal done. I think they're willing to let the sand run out of the hourglass and get to the 11th hour and say, okay, we don't have any more days. We've got to impose a 48-game season. And, oh, by the way, that just happens to be the number that we're comfortable
right,
with
that's what we
in terms
afford.
Of where player costs
yes.
would be.
We can pay you the full amount. Now, Rick, I'm getting some clarification from some people. They think it's a typo. They believe it's 640,000. Yeah, per game. Yeah,
that would make more sense. I'm just reading it from the article.
And you know what I say? If it's 640,000, now that's got to be over 48 games, doesn't it? Or no?
It says per team for each game. So it's 640,000 each game.
All right, so how much money per team, how much money are you talking about?
Well, 640,000 times the 48th.
Okay, so it's not. I mean, these are billion-dollar corporations. So if it means that you lose, I'd have to do the math. What's 640 times 50? 640.
$32 million, Dave.
I don't believe that to be. There's no way that that's true.
Well, Dave, here's the thing. Even if it is true, say the owners lose 640,000 per game. Under the player's proposal for 89 games, that works out to be $57 million. Now, you're talking about teams on average last year making $300 million. Okay, so in a year where we have a pandemic situation and it's going to be a shortened season, you might incur $57 million in losses based on where you were at last year. I don't understand why that's a terrible thing when you're talking about teams making on average in the hundreds of millions of dollars. Help me out, somebody.
I don't have the answer for you.
Okay.
I don't have the answer.
Listen, I've said it before. I mean, the owners are in better position to shoulder the financial burden of the pandemic than the players are. But it feels like they want to cram the losses down the players' throats.
But here's
because
the thing,
they
though.
Can.
But Chris, here's the thing, though. For the most part, I agree with you. But I think there are some teams, the team I root for being one of those teams, that might not necessarily be the case. Is that financially, this is really bad for them, right? Not having any cash flow to their team.
Okay, but that to me, that's an owner problem. Don't make an owner problem a player problem.
Yeah, but I mean, it is the player's problem because the owner's the one that signs the checks.
Yeah, and how many teams have that? Can't be just the Mets.
No, it can't be just the Mets. It doesn't sound like Oakland's in great shape.
No, I'm sure Miami's not in wonderful shape.
And they have, I mean, what they'll argue is, and I mean, again, just sitting here, I mean, on the sideline saying, you know, what would make perfect sense is, you know, show us the losses. That way we know and we'll feel better about this because we don't trust you. What the owners will throw back in your face, which they always do, is for the players, you want to see our books? Let's have a salary cap. Let's share the revenue. Then we'll show you what we're making. But that's not what the players want. I mean, the players want to have a free marketplace, which they have, which is unique to baseball.
Well, I don't think, well, see, here's, we're having two separate conversations because you're talking about a salary cap. That would be with the collective bargaining agreement in 2021. We're talking about trying to figure out an agreement to play baseball in 2020.
But that's how they're looking at it. But that's how they're looking at it. I mean, we came to this conclusion yesterday. If this is 2 years into a new collective bargaining agreement, they're on the field right now. But that's not the case. The timing of this is bad because, you know, after the 2021 season, the CBA is up. And they're both posturing right now. They don't want to give an inch because they feel like if we give an inch now, that'll be used against us when we negotiate this new CBA. That's why there's a standoff.
No, I hear exactly what you're saying, but I mean, everybody's saying the players should try to be more reasonable and accept less than their prorated salaries because this is an unprecedented situation. I don't understand why people aren't asking the owners to be more reasonable in terms of being able to use all the tools that we have in order to facilitate the negotiations. I mean, you've already got the books, you've got the accounting. Why not bring that to the table if you're suggesting that you're going to be taking these huge losses? Let's talk about what those losses would be so we can get to a number that we feel like would be fair for all parties involved.
Well, clearly it's not in their best interest, right? Because if that was in the owner's best interest, they would do it. If they're losing money hand over fist and they were in dire straits like they claim to be, why would you not open up your books and let the players see it if you don't have something to hide?
The only plausible explanation is that they're not in as much dire straits as they want everybody to believe financially. That would be the only reason. And I know for some individual clubs that might be the case, but again, if the players are negotiating collectively, what's in the best interest of all of the guys, I think that the owners have to take that same position. What's in the best interest of all of the teams? And some teams are going to be a little better off than other teams, but I mean, when it comes down to it, we're talking about the health of the sport, and all of the owners have a responsibility in that regard. So I just think that when you start, you know, talking about these two sides sitting down at the table, I just think that the owners have to be a little more transparent with the players if they want them to take a haircut from their prorated salaries. Jeff Passan said it, man. This is the hill that the players are willing to die on. He said it yesterday. This is the hill that the players are willing to die on with their prorated salaries, right or wrong. That's where the players are at. So if the owners want the players to come off of that, if they truly want that, then they're going to have to go about doing it another way.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Here's the thing that I think that will eventually get the deal done is that I think they've known this the entire time. I think that since that March conversation, they knew that that was going to be the sticking point for the players. So knowing that, having an idea how much money you want to spend, you're going to drag this thing out as long as you can and then say to the players, okay, because we only have a certain amount of days left, we'll give you the fully prorated, but it's going to be for this many games.
Rick, you and I are on the same page with that one. We both agree on that. What I'm talking about and the reason why I'm having this conversation in particular is because there are a lot of fans out there that feel like the players are being selfish with their stance. And I'm trying to explain why the players aren't being selfish with their stance. That's it.
No, but I think you can, I guess my point is you can explain to you blue in the face. No, fans don't want to hear it. And I think a lot of these teams feel like if they open up their books and are transparent, you'll see that they're all making a pretty, you know, a hell of a lot of money. And you're going to have a hard time. Like even the teams that don't spend any money are still making a lot of money. You're going to have a hard time, you know, selling to your fan base. Hey, this, you know, if you're one of these teams that are spending, you know, $66 million or $65 million on players and you're transparent with your books and we find out that you're making, you know, however much money, the fan base will be like, well, I mean, you're crying poor. You don't want to help build a stadium. You want us to build your stadium. You're making this much money and only playing, you know, putting this product on the field. come on, man, you got to be better than that. I don't think the teams want to expose themselves like that.
Of course not. They'll never open the books. There's no chance they'll ever open the books. So that sounds like great conversation or a great solution. It's not going to happen.
No, I know it's not going to happen, Dave, but my whole point is how can the players then trust the owners when they're talking about the losses that they're going to incur for this season?
You can't.
Okay. So that's what leads to the two sides being at a stalemate.
And that's where we are.
When you start talking about when they're trading proposals, they're not trading proposals and going back and forth based on the offers that the other side is putting out there. They're trading proposals based on the offers that their side has put out there up until this point. That's it. That's the only thing that's happened. Seems like the owners are negotiating out of one playbook and the players are negotiating out of another one.
What I don't understand is why, I mean, 48 games, it makes them even, right? The owners can afford that. It becomes a clean slate both ways. You can't add 15 games onto that. You can't give us 65 games where you eat 15 games if you're the owners. I mean, it doesn't sound like it's unreasonable.
Well, you might. See, that's where I think it ends up. But I think there's still like little things involved. I think the owners got a lot of what they wanted if a deal is done as far as players being mic'd and stuff like that, expanded playoffs. I think there are some tweaks that you'd also have to be, you know, if you want fully prorated, like we want this much of the postseason revenue as opposed to you getting the, you know what I'm saying? Like give us that money and you can keep your fully prorated salaries.
I don't think that happens. I think this ends up being a 48 game season crammed down the player's throat, and it ends up leading to Tony Clark using the only recourse that he has, which is filing a grievance. That's where I think this thing ends up.
See, I think I disagree. I think that the extra playoff games, I mean, I know these numbers are right, but you're talking about, you know, over $200 million in extra revenue with the extra playoff series. Cause now all of a sudden you're getting, I mean, 65 playoff games as opposed to, you know, your regular 33, and you can have players mic'd. So that should increase, you know.
So what is that? That's 16 game postseason, 16 team postseason?
16. Yeah. So right now you got 10. If there's no agreement, you'd keep 10.
So it'd be easier to get into the postseason than to not get into the postseason.
With the 16 teams, yeah.
Yeah.
But that's only if there's an agreement.
So with the 16 teams, it ends up being how much? $440 million in revenue?
No, with 16 teams, that's 65 potential playoff games worth about $1 billion in TV revenue.
Yeah, how much do the players get out of that?
Well, see, that's what I was asking
because I thought it was around $450 million for the players if that were to happen.
But I think that could be the wiggle room that we're talking about.
Well, it's like not really. Go ahead.
No, it is wiggle room. If you want your full prorated salaries, if that's what you're focused on, then we're going to want more of the playoff revenue as owners. That's clearly what's most important to the owners. They don't care how many regular season games they play, as long as they get to televise the playoffs in the World Series.
Right.
That's where they're going to make their TV money.
Now, what happens if you don't get the full postseason? If there's, you know, round two of this COVID in the fall?
Well, then you're in trouble. But that goes back to the initial point. If this is your main focus is the playoffs and the World Series, why did we move away so quickly from the bubble situations? You want people in seats. Why not have why not just plan on having, you know, the postseason in the World Series on a neutral site that has, you know, has the best circumstances for, you know, their state being open. It has a dome, so you don't have to worry about the elements. I mean, that would make the most sense, wouldn't it?
It would. It
because
does.
Now you could have a bubble. Doesn't I mean now you could put the players in a bubble situation because it's less people. And then we could, and even if there is another wave of
and
COVID.
Domes all over, I mean, you go. Where you go, Arizona? You go in, you know, Houston? It's a million places you're going to be able to go.
Yeah, but see, again, if I'm the players, that's what I would be arguing as well. Okay, well, I mean, don't give us that you're afraid of a second wave. We can find a way around a second wave if we have, you know, we do a similar situation to what the NBA, what boxing did last night, and what the NHL is doing. We know which teams are in the playoffs. Let's, you know, put the teams in a city, have them in a certain hotel, have them tested every day, and then we can get it done that way.
Seems like we're far from this happening, very far. 800-919-3776. We'll continue this conversation. Jeff Passan, we'll hear from him in just a moment. Also want to remind you, you can listen to us anywhere you go. Click Listen Live at ESPNNewYork.com, find 98.7 ESPN on the ESPN app or the TuneIn app, or simply tell your smart speaker, play 98.7 ESPN. At 98.7 ESPN New York, we go where you go. Here is Jeff Passan last night with Scott Van Pelt, staying steadfast in the fact that the players still want their full prorated salaries.
The more conversations I've had with players over the last week or so, the more I've come to understand that the full prorated salary is not the most important thing for them. It is more or less the only thing for them at this point. And I understand, listen, there are other issues. There's health and safety, and, you know, they have expanded playoffs that they can give to Major League Baseball as a carrot. But in the end, the players say, no matter how long the season is, we want our full pro rata.
So that's what they want. That's the one thing that the players want the most, more than anything else, Rick, is just their full prorated salary.
Exactly right. And I think the owners knew that when they made this, you know, Fugazi agreement in March, that this would be what it took to get it done. And they're just going to keep eating days in the calendar until they get to a amount of games that makes sense for them.
Which is 48.
Well, it could be 48. I mean, that could be posturing too. I mean, it could be 48. It could be, you know, like I keep saying, somewhere 60, 65. But, sure. I mean, yeah, it's definitely less than the...
But not 89.
Not 89 doesn't sound like 76 either, because 76 is a 75% of a fully prorated, which would lead me to believe it's hopefully somewhere in the 60s to try to get this deal done. Because I want more playoff teams, and I would love to hear the players mic'd up during games. Selfishly.
Well, I think whether or not they come to an agreement would hinge in part on whether or not Tony Clark would think he has a shot at being able to file a successful grievance. Because if he thinks he can have more gains, especially with this as the backdrop to the negotiations for the CBA in 21, if there could be more gains in the courtroom, then I think that's where he's going to go. That's what this is all about. Like, we keep going back and forth and talking about it. I think it's ultimately about how one side can gain leverage over the other one going into 2021 and that labor fight. I think that's what it is. So I don't know if it's necessarily just about trying to get baseball to come back this year. And because of that is why I'm skeptical that they're going to be able to find some kind of middle ground. Because if the players accept, you know, 65 games, like you're saying, Rick, or the 76 games, I think that would be the union conceding that Major League Baseball did everything that they could in order to make the finances work for both sides, and I don't think Tony Clark is there.
I don't think the players are there yet, and who knows? I mean, I don't know all the legalese and everything else, but, I mean, the more people I've listened to, I think there was enough ambiguity in that initial agreement that who knows what happens in court, but I don't know if that would be what I would hang my hat on if I was Tony Clark.
No, let's get to the call, see what some of the people have to say out there. Let's go to Gary in Jersey City. Gary, you're first up here on 98.7 ESPN. Gary?
Come on, Gary.
Too bad. Gary had a great point. Very unfortunate.
Hey, what's up? It's Jerry.
I miss Jerry. Where's Jerry? Come on, Jerry. Call in.
Oh. Well, that was during the frenzy, right? Like, whatever you do, don't say who you are. Don't say where you're from. Hey, it's Jerry.
Hey, it's Jerry.
What's up, guys? It's Jerry.
And you didn't even get that name wrong. I mean, you actually said, this is Jerry. I mean, you sometimes, you know, the names get screwed up. But, I mean, that one you actually got right.
Yeah.
Just wanted to remind everybody, this is Jerry. Yeah, serious question.
Right. If I said, hey, Steve, and he's like, no, this is Jerry.
Hey, like, okay. What's up? It's Jerry.
You could understand.
But that makes me miss the what?
Next caller up, Andy from Merrick. Not that Andy from Merrick. Let's see if there is a doppelganger. Good morning, Andy from Merrick.
Good morning. This is not the Andy from Merrick that does the question.
Now, this is off to a swimming start today.
Okay, is that me? Anyway,
you're saying. Take a seat, Andy. Give us your point. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. So I think you're framing it incorrectly about the baseball players and owners, you know, fighting and who's right and who's wrong and whose side is correct, right? They're both wrong. There's millionaires and billionaires fighting over millions of dollars, and no fan that's been sitting out of work for the past 2 months cares about who gets 90% of you know, $1 trillion and who gets 100% of their $1 billion. All the fans want is to be able to go to a bar and watch a baseball game on television. You know?
Well, you can't go to a bar. Oh, you can't go to a bar. So, I mean, let's eliminate right. that first and foremost.
Well,
and
right,
secondly, so. we're not framing it. We're not framing it the wrong way. I understand what you're saying. And as a fan, we want to see baseball. What we're trying to do is because I think of everything you listen to on the radio, we're pretty damn qualified to give you an opinion because I served on the executive committee negotiating CBAs and so did Chris with the NFL, is we're trying to give you both sides.
I mean, we
have a 3-hour show. I'm not going to sit here for 3 hours and say, you know what? Who cares what these millionaires and billionaires want? Let's just play baseball. That's going to get old real fast in a 3-hour radio show.
Right. But ultimately, the average fan who was willing to go spend $200 for a day at a baseball stadium or go and, you know, buy the season pass for MLB because they love the game, right? They look at this and, you know, all it does is it sours the fan base. I go to opening day at Yankee Stadium every year for the past 15 years, right? And you know what I care about now? Nothing about baseball. I can't wait for football to start is what I'm thinking.
So you don't care at all. So if baseball comes back on, I don't know, July 18th and they're going to play 57 games or 60 games, you're done. You're not interested at all.
I don't care to watch a 60-game season with all these guys who just fought over, like, millions and billions of dollars who I don't, you know, people are out of work. People have lost their jobs. People have lost their loved ones. And these guys are fighting over nothing. They're fighting over next year's money and, like, years ahead's money. Money that they, like, most of these guys have the money in their pocket already. They're not, you know, I understand.
No, they don't. They don't. 65% of the league makes $1 million or less. That's a majority of the league makes $1 million or less.
So guess what? The majority of Americans make
It's not, but you can't have this conversation. It's not apples to apples, man. This is not real world. This is not real life. This is not real life. This is professional sports. This is professional athlete. We're talking about billions of dollars here. And it means something to both sides. Everyone wants to see baseball. I get it. And it's not easy. You can't relate to these kind of conversations. That's completely understandable. But don't pretend like the owners care about you because they don't either.
Exactly.
Otherwise, they wouldn't charge you $16 for a beer. Or $12.50 for a hot dog.
Or $30 to park. Or any of the things that
Stop. Lucky if it's $30.
Yeah, I'm about to say, you can park at a stadium for $30. Where is that deal?
And what's MetLife?
It's a three-mile walk from there.
$50 now?
That's about $50, yeah.
Yeah. That's insane.
I think last time I was at Yankee Stadium, I think it was $50.
Yeah, it's $50 at Yankee Stadium, yeah.
I mean, it's a lot.
I got to pay an extra 50 cents for a water. If I want to buy it from the guy walking up and down the aisles. If I actually go to the concession stand, I get it for $7. But if I want to get it at my seat, it's $7.50.
You know, very infrequently do we go out for dinner that I'll turn to Sherry and say, God, look at the prices on this menu are insane. Like, you know, they're asking $27 for this at 30. Like, that doesn't faze me. But when I go to a ballpark, never one time do I leave where I'm like, dude, we just paid $11 for a beer or $8 for a water. I mean, it's talk about price gouging. It's insane.
Because when you're talking about baseball food or just beer in general, I mean, you know how much money it costs when you go to you can relate to those prices. Like, I go buy a package of hot dogs. You know how much that package of hot dogs costs or how cheap it is to make a hamburger or how much a one of these frozen pretzels you throw in the, you know what I mean? You've made those. You know how much those cost. That's why you feel like you're being taken, because you are, I mean, you're being taken advantage of.
You are being taken in a tremendous way. Let's go to John in Secaucus. John, you're next up on 98.7.
Hi, guys. Good afternoon.
Good morning.
I'd just like to say, I believe, and I've been calling you guys for a while and everything, but I don't know. I think this is a reality check for everybody, because these guys get paid an awful lot of money, and I'm not saying, like, Chris Canty and Rick DiPietro, these guys are unbelievable athletes. They're worth their weight in gold. But let's face it, this guy's coming out that would be happy making a few million dollars a year to start off with. Most people don't make that. My family, they own a sanitation company that's worth hundreds of millions. And I'm a regular guy. I own a small business. It's like oil and vinegar. They'll never understand me because it's just a different world. But don't you guys think everything got so inflated? I mean, Garrett Cole just made $300 million. People don't make that in generations. So I think everyone should just take a step back. You know, we're not going to have the same amount of fans in the seats. I'm not going to have the same amount of people in the gym to sell to. This whole world is changing. I think it shows a little bit of greediness with these players. What do you guys think? Let me ask you.
I guess my whole question is, if you think the players are being greedy, then what are the owners doing?
They're very greedy. They're extremely greedy. They should all work together to work for the people that put all this together, the people in the seats, the fans. I mean, like the last caller was right. None of us really care. You know, it's like when my family complains that their $200,000 car is in the shop and I'm driving a RAV, it's different. Everyone, I mean, you got to look out for the people that are actually watching the sports, listening to you guys, sitting in the chair. We're all regular people. I think it's just coming off bad. It really is. It's a bad look for all sports. And I like to say when football starts taking knees, watch how you see three people in the stands to begin with. But
no,
I think it's ridiculous.
That's a completely different conversation.
I don't think anyone disagrees, but listen, no one disagrees with, I mean, what he's saying as far as it's a bad look. We all agree it's a bad
it's
look.
An awful
this is not
look.
A conversation. This is not a conversation or a negotiation that you have out in public. This is meant to be done behind closed doors because regular people who watch and pay to consume your sports can't relate to how much money we're talking about here. Doesn't make sense, which is fine. But this is, let's not pretend like it was the players that started this. The owners started this because they knew this would be the result. Because this is always the result. Fans want to see the game, and they could care less about all this financial stuff, and they always, for some reason, will be on the side of the owners and not the players.
Always.
Well, Rick, you always bring up the point that the team isn't going anywhere, and that's why fans always side with the owners and not the players, because the names on the back of the jersey change, but the name on the front of the jersey doesn't. But the other part of this, too, is when we have these negotiations, when it comes to CBAs, when it comes to player costs and all of those different things, the side that wins pretty much every single time is the owners. And so if you're a fan and you just want to see a return to baseball, maybe it's a subconscious thing, but maybe that's why there's so much outrage toward the players, because the players ultimately end up being the side that bends anyway. Why don't we see if we can push them and have the court of public opinion continue to demonize them, and maybe that leads to us having the sport come back sooner. It just feels like that's always the dynamic when it comes to these types of disputes, especially when they spill over in the media and the court of public opinion.
Yeah, but see, that I think part of the problem is, and he brings up Gerrit Cole. Okay, well, the reason why Gerrit Cole makes as much money as Gerrit Cole makes is because these teams realize that if I'm not going to pay him, one of these other teams is going to pay him, because when all is said and done, we're going to make this much extra money by winning a championship.
Yep.
Like there is, I mean, I don't even know what the number is. I can only imagine what the number is. I mean, fans want to win the championship because it's, we're the best in the world. We won the championship. Owners like that, but they also like the fact that I'm going to make this much more money because we just went through the playoffs and won a championship.
This isn't charity. The owners are paying these players these kind of salaries because the players can make the owners money. That's what it comes down to.
The only reason
you're going to give Gerrit Cole $300 million is because Gerrit Cole is going to help you get that return on your investment. Period.
True. They don't look at it and say, okay, at the end of this contract, we're probably going to lose about $50 million, but we may have a World Series or two. No.
This is not this guy is so good, he deserves to have this. No, this guy is so good, he can help me make money.
That's
right. He can make my franchise more valuable.
Right. Cause you're investing in the future of the organization is what you're doing.
Which is exactly
the opposite of what is happening right now within Major League Baseball. Now today on ESPN Daily, college athletes finding their voices on social issues alongside the pros. Hear from former Missouri safety Ian Simon about protesting racism after Ferguson and compare that with today's new bigger wave of college sports activism. That's ESPN Daily. Subscribe now wherever you get your podcasts. All right, let's bring him in, the original Andy from Merrick. Good morning, Andy.
Good morning, guys. How are we doing on this beautiful Wednesday?
Oh, we're doing. Listen, don't ruin my weather at 12:30. But we're doing fine.
I would never step on your weather report, David. It seems like a baseball kind of day, so I have a 3-pack of baseball questions plus a bonus MLB draft question in light of tonight's amateur draft.
Okay,
all right.
Starting with Chris, it seems like a straightforward question. It may not be. Who is the Mets' all-time leading home run hitter.
All-time leading home run hitter from the Mets. Let's see. Who would it?
When you're ready for help, I'm here for you.
Dave. I want a little bit of help. I'm going to phone a friend. Who are the guys? Like what era did the guy that leads the Mets in home runs play in? Can you give me a general era, Dave?
I'm pretty confident. I'm not 100%. I believe he was involved, very well entrenched in that great 80s Mets team.
Okay, so
is that right?
That would be correct.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, so you know I got to go with Dal Strawberry then.
That is correct.
Nice. Yeah, that was my guy, man. When I was a little kid, I had his card, his baseball card. Even though I was a Yankees fan, I had Dal Strawberry and Dwight Gooden baseball cards.
Fraud.
How's that a fraud?
Fraudulent.
Come on, Ricky. Come on now.
Fraudulent.
The surprising thing is David Wright, only 10 home runs behind Strawberry.
Would have shattered that record had he not gotten hurt. Shattered it.
Absolutely. We'll go to Rick, our Tampa Bay specialist.
Oh, here we go.
Rick, same question. Who is Tampa Bay's all-time leading home run hitter?
Now you see, this is what happened. He's now using my NFC South.
yes.
This is fairly recent, I would imagine, right?
Yes, sir.
Does he have
I believe he still plays.
Does he
still play?
He does still play, but no longer for the Rays.
But does he have a sibling who was also a big-time player?
He's got a sister that was actually a movie star. Yeah. Actually,
I don't know that.
A movie star. Yeah. Evan Longoria. This is Evan Longoria.
Evan Longoria is correct.
Nice.
Oh, yeah, baby. NFC South, you know it.
We're going to take you out to Kansas City, David.
Oh, God.
Only two Kansas City Royals have knocked in over 1,000 runs in their career. George Brett is one.
Ugh.
Please name the other.
This got to be an old. I'm thinking. You know who was a very good player was Mike Sweeney, but I'm not going to go with him yet. Rick, you have any idea?
I have an idea. I don't want to steer you in the wrong direction. I like to let you have it percolate a little bit.
So I'm thinking it's going to be like those. I don't know, like an Amos Otis, maybe Mike Sweeney, Hal McRae. These are the names that are coming to mind. Hi. Nobody jumps out as like a clear-cut number two. I would think that George Brett is clearly number one.
Number one by almost 600 ribby.
Yeah.
I'll give you a little hint, David. This player's son also played in the major league.
Hal McRae, then.
There you go.
Nice. Brian McRae's son. Okay.
All right. I'm going to ask you to put your collective heads together for this Major League Baseball draft question. There have been three number one overall picks that have landed themselves in Cooperstown. Please name them.
Number one picks.
Picks to go to
end
the
up
hall.
In Cooperstown.
Wow, that's a good question.
Do you expect anything but good questions?
Oh,
no, sometimes
you
have bad days. Sometimes you have bad days, let's be honest.
Rarely.
No, look at you.
Very confident.
A-Rod has to be one of them, right? Well, no, he's not in.
A-Rod's
not
in Cooperstown.
No, he's not there.
Yeah, that's right.
How about Griffey? I think Griffey was one, wasn't he?
Griffey Jr.
Griffey.
Is one. And was
Chipper Jones?
Nice. Chipper Jones is number two.
And Paul Wilson, obviously. No, I'm just kidding.
A recent inductee took him a long time to get
there. This was controversial, right? Was this controversial?
Very much so.
Yeah, this is Harold Baines, I think.
Nicely done, Rico.
Wow, beautiful.
Job, save DiPietro.
Oh,
nicely
so
done,
good.
Rico.
Guys, fantastic. As always, stay healthy.
All right, we appreciate it. Good job, as always, by the great Andy in Merrick.
DiPietro, Kathy, and Rothenberg. Weekdays at 10 on 98.7 ESPN.